Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yeah, say your name.
Oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, April 19th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Cliff Schechter. As we discuss this really insane week and the breaking news that is ongoing as we speak. Also on the program, coincidentally, Boston native Jen Kirkman, comedian who will give us, maybe we'll get to movie picks. The insanity that's going on right now may interfere. Just an absolutely crazy finish to a really crazy week. It is now 12 o'clock on the East Coast. About 14 hours ago in Boston. Well, I mean, as of yesterday, following the failures by the New York Post and then sort of in right-wing quarters of blaming the Boston attacks on a Saudi national, of putting a teenager, apparently a random teenager, on the cover of the New York Post. And that teenager has been doing everything he can at this point to make it clear that he is not a suspect, and he never was. Yesterday afternoon, or about 5 o'clock on the East Coast, the federal officials basically made public video of the two primary suspects in the Boston Marathon bombing. One had a white baseball cap, and he was suspect two. One, who appeared to be a little bit older and a little bit bigger, had a black baseball cap. He was suspect number one. Subsequent to that, we have learned that one of the iconic figures who was injured in the blast, the guy who some of you may have seen the really disturbing photo of him being wheeled away from the blast because he had lost both his legs. Apparently, as soon as he regained consciousness in the hospital, though he was heavily medicated, he wrote that he had seen the perpetrator, saw the bag, looked into my eyes. He apparently was the beginning of the search for federal authorities to search the videotapes to find suspect number one, who then led them to suspect number two as they sort of reverse engineered the video. They released this video last night at 5 p.m. Around 10 o'clock, they released another photograph that was taken by one of the runners in the marathon. It was a high-quality picture, which allowed you to zoom in and see suspect number two, the guy with the baseball hat, far more clearly. Within about an hour, at about 10:30 last night, following a robbery of a 7-Eleven in the Central Square area, which is just across the Mass Ave bridge, I would say maybe a mile from where the initial explosions took place in Central Square. Just if you go west on Boylston from where the explosions took place, you take a right. Well, I guess, and you start to head northwest on Mass Ave, cross the Mass Ave bridge into Cambridge. And then just drive into Cambridge, past MIT, into Central Square before you get to Harvard Square. There was a robbery at 7-Eleven, and about not even maybe a quarter mile away from there, from down to Kenmore Square, that is now heading sort of northeast in Cambridge, there was an MIT police officer who was shot. Subsequent to that, a car was carjacked, and then I guess there was some pursuit of this carjacked car into Watertown, where there was a standoff and a shootout with police authorities. These guys got out of the car, I guess, and attempt to throw a bomb at the police. Suspect number two with the white hat got into another car. His brother, who we now know is his brother, 26-year-old brother, was shot. And then the 19-year-old brother apparently inadvertently, I think, ran over him. The guy had explosives on him of some form. They burned him. He was later pronounced dead at the hospital. Authorities believe they have isolated where this 19-year-old is hiding in some part of Watertown. They're going door to door now. They have isolated parts of the city. Meanwhile, what is really extraordinary is they have shut down the whole city. There is no public transportation. There is no taxi cabs. They have basically issued an order. I mean, I don't know what the legal force of this order is. It is not martial law, but it is somewhere between a warning and martial law, I guess. Essentially saying, I don't know the specific words right now, get cover or something to that effect. The governor basically said everyone should stay in their homes. So the streets of Boston are deserted. If you go out onto these streets, you necessarily place yourself in some form of suspicion. There is question as to whether or not there's a third accomplice. Authorities stopped a train headed down to Connecticut from Boston. They found nothing. There was an APB for a Massachusetts license plate SUV in Connecticut, but they have found that car in Massachusetts. It's unclear whether or not there's a third accomplice. These two guys, one is a 19-year-old, supposedly completely just about as close as you can be to an all-American kid, it seems like, in high school. Was the captain of the wrestling team, got a scholarship to go to UMass Dartmouth, was considered a great kid by everyone they knew. Now, he graduated, I guess, a year or two ago. From all accounts at this point, both brothers have been in the country since about 2002 or 2003. They were brought here with their parents. They were in Tajikistan, I believe it was, and they came over to this country. And they are of Chechen descent to the extent that that's relevant. The older brother apparently was trying to get on, or claimed he was trying to get on to the U.S. boxing Olympic team. He has said in the past, you know, that he likes the USA, but he doesn't get Americans. He's not friends with any Americans. You know, that's all that we know at this point. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Cliff Schechter. Obviously, there has been a lot of other stories going on this week. We can only do so much and provide you with so much information. We're going to talk to Cliff to catch caught up on what happened with guns and talk more about what's happening in Boston. So we'll take a break. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is Friday. We're talking to Cliff Schechter. And, of course, Cliff, you know, I just did a recap. First off, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Sam.
I just did a recap of everything that's happened in the past, essentially 24 hours, in terms of Boston. The you know, there's only so much that we can sort of provide in terms of information. I've caught everybody up on where we are. You know, what happens next, of course, are the implications of this on broader policy debates. And now, of course, yesterday, I mean, this has just been an incredibly crazy week. But yesterday and the day before, we saw essentially, for the time being, the demise of any type of legislation that would provide some type of reasonable gun control, gun safety. Nate Bell, the an Arkansas state rep, a big, you know, NRA supporter and supportee, I guess, tweeted this morning, "I wonder how many Boston liberals spent the night cowering in their homes, wishing they had an AR-15 with a high-capacity magazine." I'm going to guess about zero.
That's kind of their worldview. And that's the thing that's so sad about these people, is that they're these paranoid, little, scared, pathetic, you know, they think that we all think the way they do, which is they're fearful of everything. They're fearful of any kind of change. They're fearful of people that have different color skin, or have a different sexual orientation, or just anything. And, you know, oh my God, I need to hide in my home with my big gun and protect myself. And that, you know, that's the worldview that comes out every time Wayne LaPierre opens his mouth. These roving bands of Latino gangs, and, you know, I mean, it's like, that's, I've come to the conclusion, obviously, a while ago, that that's part of the problem here. Is that these sad, pathetic, scared little souls think that we all think the way they do. And we don't, obviously, because, you know, we use crazy stuff like reason and logic and stuff like that.
Now, I didn't go too deeply into basically what happened with the votes on the gun reform legislation that was up in the Senate, anticipating your coming on the program today. You have done work in the past. I don't know if you're continuing to do work with mayors against illegal guns. Of course, this is also an issue that you that you're also very passionate about. So just give us a rundown. What took place this week? What we were hoping would take place, and what did take place?
Well, what we were hoping, we had a number of amendments that were being voted on. One of them was one that, while not having the standard of universal background checks we would like, would have helped a lot, because it would have forced all internet sales, as well as sales at gun shows, which is where a vast majority of these things are going on, to frankly, to criminals and those who are mentally unstable and shouldn't be able to get guns. You know, as you would imagine, they're like arms bazaars. Anybody knows they knows you can go to them, or anybody knows you can go on the internet. No questions asked. It's easy. That one of the amendments, which was the Manchin-Toomey one, would have closed that and made and at least solidified that. There was another one dealing with gun trafficking. And then there were a couple crazy ones that came from, oh, well, we should mention the assault weapons one and the high-capacity magazine ban. It's sad that I almost forget to mention them because after what happened in Newtown and kids had pieces of their bodies blown off in a classroom when they were 6 years old, that was not going to pass and didn't have a chance of passing by the time we got into the beginning of this past week, even earlier than that. So those are the ones on the positive side. And then, as always happens, there are a number of amendments put out by pathetic NRA stooges, both Republicans and a couple of Democrats, sad Democrats. excuse me. And none of them passed. They all were defeated. One of them would have had concealed carry reciprocity, which was by John Cornyn, which would be terrible for places like New York and others that have reasonable restrictions on who can carry a concealed weapon, whereas, you know, in certain states like Utah and Alabama, if you show up and you actually have a pulse and are not drunk, although I'm sure that's probably negotiable, you can get yourself a concealed weapon basically at a local police station with no questions asked. And so to try to make other states that have concealed carry adhere to the standards, not to mention the fact that, of course, remember, conservatives are for federalism in states' rights, right. But to make it would be a disaster. I mean, really, I would hope that it would lead to states starting to rescind concealed carry, because it wouldn't apply to states. It wouldn't apply to Illinois, which is the only state that has no concealed carry. I would think that my reaction, if I were, you know, if I were in the legislature in New York or California, or a place that has stringent requirements of spending time on the range, not having a background of domestic battery, not having a criminal background, and a variety of things. If that was passed, then I would just say, okay, well then I guess we're not going to have concealed carry.
Now, what's amazing about this reciprocity amendment, which, you know, is sort of the, the flip side of DOMA in some respects. It actually got more votes than the expanded background checks did. I mean, you know, like, let's put this in some type of context here. It seems to me that what we witnessed this week was not just, and now look, we all know what the numbers are on this. You know, you have 80 to 90% approval across the board with Americans for expanded background checks. Yet somehow, and I've never seen any polling on reciprocity, but I imagine it's got to be less than that because, you know, people don't want more guns. There's just simply not the majority's more guns.
It doesn't have a majority, to be clear. We did that polling back when the last time they tried this. It was called the Thune Amendment. John Thune tried to do this, and it didn't pass in the Senate then, and it does not have a majority. So.
Okay, all right. So yet we saw 57 votes cast. Now again, nothing made the filibuster threshold here, but 57 votes cast. Essentially in favor of reciprocity versus 54% who voted for the expanded background checks. I mean, there's something really strange that is going on here. I mean, is this simply a function of the money that the NRA is out there? Because, you know, we're seeing, you know, money that's coming in that is at least attempting to match it. Is this a question of just for some, the politics, is this have a dynamic with the politicians that are up for re-election in the Senate in 2014? I mean, what's going on here?
I mean, there's a number of things going on. I think there's a few crazy people that actually perhaps believe this stuff. I mean, there's certainly a few on the Republican side I'm not quite sure are all there. I mean, I like to see the arguments that for people to think that someone like Jim Inhofe is all there mentally. I doubt it. So there's a certain segment of people that are kind of like the guy that sent out that the message you're talking about liberals cowering with AR-15s. They're just people that are crazy conservatives who all they live to do is hate liberals, hate everything, and resent. And they're not well functioning human beings. And then there are a whole lot of wimps that haven't kind of grasped yet that things have changed. The demographics are changing, and all of the groups that are growing, called the Obama Coalition, call it what you will, are much more strongly in favor of gun safety by huge numbers than the old white rural base. I mean, that's part of the issue of what you've got going on here. You've got these guys who are from, a few Democrats who are from these sort of smaller, more rural states, who even don't seem to be able to read polls and understand that even if they come from a very pro-gun state, if you want to put it that way, that has a lot of gun, you know, shops and it's a hunting tradition, whatever you want to call it, vast majorities of their public, because we did polling in those states, 83% in Arkansas, 94% in North Dakota, still support passing universal background checks. And frankly, a lot of people are shocked when they learn we don't already have them. But these guys still think that they do a calculation where they still don't get who the electorate is. And I understand they're in older, more rural states to begin with. But they think their base will be there for them. And if you've seen anything from the last 24 hours, from the numerous funders who've said they'll give no money to these guys, big funders, Ken Lehrer, people like that who founded the Huffington Post, to MoveOn.org, who said they will never support any of these four Democratic senators again, to DFA, who's talking about trying to find primary challenges for them. I don't think they really get who their base is.
And the thing I think is also sort of interesting is that the calculation that these senators are making is that the level of intensity of the supporters for gun reform versus those who are afraid that this is a slippery slope and, Obama's coming to take their guns. They're calculating that this level of intensity is so unbalanced that they will pay a bigger price, assuming, they're operating on a sort of rational political calculation, that they will pay a bigger price by voting for gun reform than not. But this seems to be it has to be even more granular than that, because they have to assume that the people who would vote for them, because you have to assume that a lot of those people who believe that we're on a slippery slope and Obama's coming for the guns are not going to vote for a Democrat, no matter what.
That's right.
And so there's a subset of those people that they assume. There is a subset of those people who vote Democratic who won't vote for them. And that number of that subset they perceive is bigger than the subset of people that they're going to turn off. And that just seems to me to be a very difficult calculation to make.
In 2010 in this state, pre-Newtown even, I watched as our governor, Ted Strickland, who is from the Appalachian part of the state, pandered to that electorate, pandered and drove around in a van or whatever, with an RV with NRA stickers on it, got his NRA endorsement, passed the Castle Law, which is essentially the stand your ground for your home and car, and did anything they wanted, that the NRA wanted. By the way, his predecessor, Bob Taft, of the famous Taft family, who was a Republican governor, wouldn't pass that Castle Law. But Strickland did. He was a Democrat who wanted to pander to these same rural white voters that really, can call themselves Democrats. I mean, people need to understand in Arkansas and Kentucky, for example, there's still more registered Democrats than there are Republicans. That's not the way they vote, quite clearly. It doesn't matter what your registration. It doesn't matter if you're still registered a Democrat because you were an FDR Democrat 40 years ago and you were part of that coalition. That's not who the coalition is anymore. For better or worse, that's just the situation. And so I watched Ted Strickland do that, and guess what? He was just about the only sitting governor who lost in a reelection, because I watched his people around me who are suburban and urban Democrats who are sickened by that. And I bet you they'd be a lot more sickened by it post Newtown. And so these guys don't seem to understand that, that I wouldn't vote for any of them. I'm not saying I'd go vote for their opponent. I'm not saying I'd go work for their opponent, but I wouldn't pull the lever for any of the four of them if I were in their state. Now, let them figure out how to win.
Let me ask you the flip side of this. There were some Democrats, and to be fair, there were four Republicans who voted for the expansion of the background checks. That includes your old buddy John McCain. I'm very curious as to what personal animosity he had towards somebody who's voting the other side. Susan Collins, of course, Pat Toomey, who co-sponsored the amendment with Manchin, and Kirk. They are Republicans who essentially crossed the aisle. Secondly, you had Democrats who were sort of surprising that voted for the amendment. Like I'm thinking of Mary Landrieu, and I'm thinking Tester and
Kay Hagan
and Hagan. You know,
yep.
So what are these outfits that are going to attempt at least to maybe actively punish those Democrats who voted against this and or who are, you know, sort of pledging not to do anything in support of these Democrats? Are they doing something extra to help these? Are they also providing a carrot as well as a stick for those who voted the way they wanted them to?
Yes, they are. I can't speak for all organizations. I can tell you that Gabby Gifford's organization is on the phone right now, or on robocalls right now that are thanking Kay Hagan, thanking Mary Landrieu, thanking Susan Collins, thanking Pat Toomey. Mark Kelly, I think, did the call. It's his voice doing it. I know that I've seen Mayors Against Legal Guns, who I've consulted for, has come out and done the same thing. No, there will be plenty of carrots and sticks, you know, and I mean, look, anybody who's got the smallest platform in the world, I know, as I've said many times as we, you know, we look at this thing, you know, there are a lot of Democrats who have re-election in either hostile territory or difficult territory, and we know who to prioritize. You know, we know it's pretty simple. The people that prioritize are kids. I mean, who are you going to fight for? Are you going to fight for Mark Pryor or Kay Hagan? Mark Pryor is also one of the three or four Democrats who hasn't come out for gay marriage yet. He's terrible on everything. Why would you bother him trying to get him reelected? I mean, frankly, you need to throw one Democrat overboard. I'm ready to throw Mark Pryor overboard. Mm. You know, I mean, that's the reality of it, is you're not going to be able to protect every Democrat. A few of them are going to lose. And so it's simple. Go protect Kay Hagan. Go protect Jean Shaheen in New Hampshire, who's up for reelection. Protect Mary Landrieu. When it comes to Mark Begich and Mark Pryor, two freshmen in very difficult states, they're on their own. I wouldn't do a damn thing to help them. I won't lift a finger. I won't say a nice thing about them, and I'll continually point out what traitors they are. And if that hurts them and they lose their reelection, you know, that's their problem. They can figure out how to do it. And I've talked to a lot of people. I mean, look, you and I have a common friend, Shannon Moore, who, you know, who is probably the largest progressive voice in Alaska, who's come out and said Mark Begich is dead to her. Mm. You know, she's got a radio show there. She's got a column in the Anchorage Daily News. She's got a TV show on weekends. She's not uninfluential, if that's
right,
a word.
Right.
And I just think there's a lot of us that are going to be reacting that way to this, you know, and saying, you know, you see what happens when your base abandons you, because you've abandoned us. You know, but again, it also goes back, some of it has to go back to Harry Reid and the fact, and not only does this filibuster get allowed to be used in a completely non-painful way, but, you know, how is it that Heidi Heitkamp and Mark Begich, those two especially, can even get away with this? Can you imagine any freshman Democrat standing up to the president's priorities and ignoring their majority leader when LBJ was the majority leader? Like, they'd find their desk outside on the avenue.
Well, let's
you know, they'd find
about
their committee assignments stripped. They'd find, I mean, how they can even get away with this is unbelievable. This is one of the president's top priorities. And again, the one thing I'll say about this is you see DFA, you see Move On, OFA has said they're going after Democrats who are against this, the four Democrats.
Now, people should know that OFA is Organizing for America. It was the sort of the rebirth of Obama for America. So this is the political action group, I guess you could say, that is closely aligned with the Obama administration. So, yeah, let me ask you about that. What does this say?
Sure.
What does this say about, I mean, how does this reflect on President Obama and what he has the ability to do now? Because now this is not, this is sort of a unique type of issue. This is not one like immigration reform that has been building on for an extended period of time. This is, this legislation really got its, the catalyst was obviously Sandy Hook and a series of other massacres that led up to it. But he put about as much effort into passing this legislation, or at least getting a vote, as any. And it seems to me that, or I am asking you, do you think this has implications? And maybe this is part of the reason why OFA has to go out there and actually flex some muscle now, because if the president can't say to those members of his own party, hey, you're going to pay a price for ignoring my number one priority. If he can't say that, then he seems to basically be in a situation where he may just be a full-on lame duck at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some truth to that, certainly. It makes him, I mean, when four members of his own party, now granted, he needed 60 votes and he wouldn't have gotten it. He would have gotten to, if Harry Reid had stuck with it and didn't vote against it for procedural reasons, he got the other four, he still would have been stuck at 59. But there's still a much, you know, there's still something to be said for the fact that if your own party is willing to abandon you on something like this, that's that important, it really doesn't make you look very strong. I mean, you know, again, I'm going to sit here and talk about what it makes Harry Reid look like. It makes him look like a joke. But yeah, it hurts Obama too. And so, no, I don't think they're going to give up on this fight. And I think they know that in this particular case, when it comes to the what, you know, Americans for Responsible Solutions are doing, Gabby Gifford's group, she just wrote that powerful op-ed in the New York Times. They've already raised millions of dollars and have said, come out and said, you know, if we're not going to, if this Congress won't do it, we're going to get the Congress we want. Or we need to do it. Mayor Bloomberg, obviously, who we've talked about before, that they've got a lot of people that are well-funded that are going to have their backs on this and don't really care whether it's Democrat or Republican. And that's just the truth of it, is that they're going to, you know, if these guys want to go down, they'll go down. And you know, it looks like, again, you never know. This is right in the aftermath. A lot of people are angry. Will some people make threats and back off? I assume some will. But right now, again, I've read emails from DFA and Move On and OFA. I've talked to friends in those places and other groups, PCCC, and I mean, you know, people that aren't shy about going after Democrats when they're terrible. And, you know, and the benefit, if you want to call it that, of these couple people is that these four, as I pointed out with Pryor and gay marriage, is these guys happen to be terrible in virtually everything else. So you have to make priorities. You know, and not everybody, believe me, Kay Hagan has done plenty of things I don't like, but, you know, so is someone like Bill Nelson in Florida, but I make priorities. I look at people that are kind of too moderate for me, but I'll support, and people that just aren't worth it, you know, and I think to a lot of folks, this was a 90% issue where kids were gunned down and murdered, you know, when you add that in with the people, the slow motion sort of epidemic, the tragedy taking place every day in cities like Chicago and Washington because of guns that are being imported from places like Indiana and Virginia next door that have loose gun laws. You know, everyone has just sort of, I think people have just gotten to that point. We've had it, you know, and if these guys are going to do that, then we're done with them.
All right, listen.
We'll see, you know, to get back to the original point. I know I sort of rambled a little bit there with Obama. I think he has to. I think you'll see OFA going after them aggressively. I think he has to have at least all the Democrats on his side.
Now, listen, we are bound to see a little bit more of this, you know, type of thing where this Arkansas lawmaker is saying, I bet those Boston liberals wish they had, which is just sort of just stunt. I mean, just people need to digest.
It's childish. It's just
it's beyond childish. People need to digest what this guy is saying. First off, you're talking about a city that is in lockdown, that had explosions go off, that had that was attacked essentially by either you know, some form of maniac, whether they are terrorists in a technical sense or not. They're obviously clearly trying to spread terror. They have killed now at least four people. They have injured dozens others, some very critically. Here's an Arkansas lawmaker using this opportunity to just basically crap on Boston and crap on the people who live there. They're liberals, whatnot. And then, of course, he's using it with some means in which to sort of, you know, make this sort of bizarre connection. You know what? There are hundreds of police officers on the streets with automatic weapons, with literally with tanks. Okay? So the issue is not that there's not enough armaments there. The issue is that, obviously, you know, people who are going to build bombs are going to build bombs.
There's important points there, too, Sam, which is, first of all, take idiot Arkansas lawmaker aside, which, sadly, at this point is almost redundant.
Right.
And let's make a couple of points here. First of all, it's right-wingers like that imbecile post-Oklahoma City that refused to pass this chemical tracing so that they could have tracked the black powder explosives like the ones used in Boston. That's first of all. It's imbeciles like this guy in Arkansas who have worked with the NRA to make sure the ATF, who's charged with not just finding guns but explosives and preventing people from getting explosives, that the ATF has no leadership, nobody running it, and hasn't for six, 7 years.
Literally prevented an actual chief of the ATF to be appointed.
Yes. There's no one running. It'd be like if there was nobody at the Secretary of Defense. There was just none there, which, of course, some of these right-wingers tried to do that, too. And you know, there's nobody running it. They spend time attacking them and making up and exaggerating conspiracy theories like Fast and Furious, attacking the organization, calling them jackbooted thugs, cutting their funding, not allowing them to share information with other organizations, agencies, and the public, not allowing them to do research they need to do. This is what they've done to the organization that's charged with helping protect us from things like what happened in Boston.
That's the second thing.
And let me make a third point, which is right now, you know, as far as I know, and I don't know the updated facts, but you can tell me, they've killed one of these guys has been killed, right, of the two suspects, but the other one is still out there.
Yes.
Well, right now he could walk into a gun show, and if people didn't know his face, no background check would have to be done, and he could buy a gun. He could buy an assault weapon. He could buy a 50-caliber rifle that could take down a small aircraft. He could do all of that because of the vote that the almost entire Republican Party and these four idiot Democrats took the other day. So understand who it is that's enabling and empowering criminals and terrorists. And you know, whatever said imbecile from Arkansas has to say.
And I would add, the irony is that you hear these people talking about we need these guns, you know, because in the event to fight off a government and government tyranny, and you look at the fact that they could shut down, basically make Boston a ghost town, make anybody who is out on the streets at 9:30 in the morning considered as some type of suspect. And that they're driving around in tanks. There are like paramilitary units throughout the city. All of that comes from funding that they have all authorized for the city, for cities like Boston, for cities who had no business even needing it, militarizing the police. The, you know, hypocrisy is such a lame criticism. But, of course, you know, people should see the cross current of agenda here and know that at the end of the day, it's just about money. And now, Cliff, we're out of time. I gotta let you go. We'll obviously be talking more about this in the past. This was an amazing week in terms of news that really didn't get the coverage. We didn't get a chance to mention the destruction of the credibility of Reinhard Rogoff, which was the foundation of the austerity that's going on. The report that came out this week about saying unequivocally that U.S. engaged in torture that was headed up by your buddy Asa Hutchinson and another former congressman, where they both basically said we tortured. It was systemic. The responsibility goes to the top. We haven't had a chance to really talk about the implications of immigration for this thing. We've got a lot to talk about next week, assuming that the news calms down in some fashion. But I really want to get to an understanding that people need to have of what's happened with the gun reform legislation and what's going to happen in the future. As always, Cliff, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Hey, man, as always, I appreciate you having me on Fridays.
All right.
Thanks, bro.
All right, folks, follow Cliff at Cliff Schechter on Twitter for more as the week goes on. We got to take a break. When we come back, I don't know, we may lighten up with Jen Kirkman. She's a Bostonian, so she may be a little bit pissed. about what's going on. But, we'll, it's Friday. It still is Friday, despite the fact that all sorts of just hell has broken loose this week. All right. We will be back in just a moment. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Hopefully, she was just getting into an elevator. Jen Kirkman.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Good. I'm getting in. I have two more stops to go, and then I'll be free and clear.
Okay. All right. Well, in the meantime, I will remind everyone that you have a new book out. It's called I Can Barely Take Care of Myself. Tales from a Happy Life Without Kids, which is particularly interesting to me, Jen, because I have a new child, and I couldn't agree more with the notion of being childless. at this point.
Is this your second? I thought you already had kids.
Yes, it is my second.
I
had one a long time ago, and I was quite sure at that time that I wanted to be childless, and I needed a reminder, and I got it.
You needed a reminder? Oh, my new kid is a reminder. Well, I hope that he or she can grow up to listen to this episode and feel really good.
Well, you know, he would have to search through so many different episodes to find it.
He won't be. He'll be so lazy. He'll be part of this new generation that just lays in bed and, you know, never gets up. So you don't have to worry about it.
I found that my whole theory is just going to be I'm going to just put so much out there that the amount of effort that it would be involved in him having to be able to track something like this down would be just too great.
I like that attitude. I got it. I hear you. Yeah. Sift through all of Daddy's greatest work. See if you have the time to ever find you.
Right. Exactly. So, Jen, how are you? So this is sort of exciting. I mean, this is exciting, isn't it? You have a book out now. People may know you from Drunk History. Was on HBO. I mean, I guess I watched it all online, but it was on HBO too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was on two episodes. One of them was on HBO because, like, I don't know, it's a boring story, like Funny or Die Bob, it went on HBO, blah, blah, blah. But one of them, the one that was on HBO, won the Sundance Short Film Jury Prize a couple years ago.
Wow. And then, obviously...
Which I get no money or recognition from, but I just think it's a cool thing to say.
Of course not. But you could put an award on your website.
On my tattoo I'm getting? Yeah, I could do that.
Wait, you're getting a tattoo?
No, I'm never getting one. And Drunk History is coming back this summer to Comedy Central, and I'm in one more, and then that's it. No more. I can't do that drinking anymore.
Oh, okay. And you were also a regular on Chelsea Lately. I have to admit, I've never seen the show.
That's okay. You know, there's a lot of shows out there with people talking about pop culture events. I mean, we were one of the first, but that's okay. You can watch all the other ones.
All right. Well, I don't even watch the other ones, too, if it makes you feel any better.
I don't watch anything, and no one ever believes me, and I'm not one of those, oh, I don't own a TV people, but I kind of can't sit still. I like to listen to podcasts. I've got stuff on my DVR, and I'll have, like, one marathon day a month, and then that's it.
Jen, Boston, you're a Boston native, obviously.
Yes.
I think that's we first met when you were in Boston, right?
Absolutely. I think so, yeah.
Back in the day, and it is so effed up there right now. It's crazy. Have you been following?
Yeah, I
know you're. I mean, you're on a book tour, so you're obviously doing a lot of interviews right now. It's just insane what's going on there.
And I'm getting a lot of interviews canceled because MSNBC wants to just show coverage 24 hours a day before they even know what's going on. But it's awful. Obviously, it's so sad. It's insane. It's so random. And now the shooting last night at MIT. It's just getting to be nonsense. And I'm just starting to get just angry. I'm just so sick of thinking of people being not necessarily afraid, but that you have to think. It used to be you walk out of your house, okay, hold your keys in your hand, don't carry a purse. You know, you might get mugged. But now it's just like you can just get shot anywhere, a bomb can go off. I'm just sick of that. I'm sick of people having to be afraid.
But isn't that also, I mean, part of the problem is, like, you know, the reality is that you're... five times as many people were killed in an explosion in Texas at a fertilizer transport station, essentially, that, you know, just hadn't been investigated, but hadn't even been inspected in too long, than you can from a terrorist attack. I mean, I guess that's the nature of it, though. But, I mean, I wonder how much our media sort of plays into that.
Well, I actually, now here's the question. Was that explosion in Texas, so that was just like a faulty thing and the thing blew up? I thought that was a planned attack, or no?
No. In Texas, it was just they had chemicals in there that they probably shouldn't have had in there. And they haven't quite figured out what happened, but there was no attack. It was just
okay. See,
explosion.
That's what I thought when I originally heard it, because it's my mind pieced together something rational. And then the reports are coming in near Waco, the anniversary of Waco, and they start hinting without saying that it's all related. And oh, things are blowing up all over. And they love to do that, like simply just to keep you watching the show. And they get, you know, all the people watching commercials. But I mean, I think it's like this is just the world we live in. There's going to be this stuff happening, and I wish it wouldn't. And I'm so glad to see that people are willing to jump into the fray and help each other instead of just run away. But I just can't stand the 24-hour news cycle. It's upsetting, and then it makes people feel helpless, and then people start doing weird things like getting influenced by the media. We shouldn't talk about it today. It's not right to today. Let's discuss it tomorrow. It's like, no, it's always the right time,
right?
Says Martin Luther King. I'm not saying I thought of that, but it's always the right time to do what's right. And I just don't like how it, like, people become zombies and start parroting what the media says. I'm like, don't listen to Chris Matthews or freaking whoever the other one is that's on Fox News.
Weren't you supposed to go on Chris Matthews today? Who are you going to go? Whose show are you going to go on today on MSNBC?
Oh, they all canceled me.
Whose show was it going to be, though?
Oh, I was going to be on The Cycle.
Oh.
Which is just like, people, I feel like it's like The View, but without, you know, five women. And I'm like, oh, calm down. But they wanted to show footage over and over of people running in terror. This was even before they knew who, you know,
right,
who had done it. So,
all right, well, let's talk a little bit about your book.
I never knew
that you took did you take a vow of being childless, or you don't want to have children?
I didn't take a vow. No, I've just never been interested in having a child. It's just, I literally don't have the urge. And there's nothing scientific in my book, but I do have a theory that some people just aren't born with it. And, I'll be 39 soon. And I just never wanted it. And, I thought it was normal. I never really talk about it unless people ask. And then I noticed the book is more about people's reactions and how nosy we are as a society and how it's hard to understand, like, even the most liberal, open-minded people, at this one juncture, they stop and they can't comprehend it. I'll go to parties and people say, do you have kids? They'll say no. I'll say, do you want kids? They'll say no. And then here comes the questions. You're selfish. You're going to die alone. Who will take care of you when you're old? How do you fulfill your life? You're supposed to replace yourself on earth. Like, people get really personal to the point where, as a grown woman, I've cried in bathrooms at cocktail parties and gone home early because I can't. The questions just don't stop.
But you're getting these questions from other comedians. I mean, this is, I'll tell you something.
Not other comedians, like women, you know, it's usually, comedians' wives do it to me because the male comedians get to go on the road while their wives have the babies.
Right. There's a certain amount of resentment.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something. I never understood the desire not to have children more, honestly, than when I had a child. I mean, it completely takes over your life in a way. And also, I got to say, you know, from a career perspective, there's no doubt in my mind, it is a career killer.
I would literally have to stop what I do, because what I do involves being at work 40 hours a week. I'm divorced, so there would be no man, and I travel every weekend, so I would have to literally just be a single mom on welfare. And a lot of people still look at me like, well, that's what you should be doing. I swear to God. And I've had some, you know, I've had Twitter fights with certain male comedians who said, I don't even believe you. People don't harass you about this. I don't do that to people, but it's absolutely true. Every woman that has read this book so far has said that they can't go anywhere, whether it's a family party or a work party, without having to defend something. And then you end up being called preachy, and I'm not preaching anything. I don't want anyone to know what's the book about it, but I don't want anyone to know because I don't want to talk about it. I just want to just be me, and if you have kids, great. I'll come over and, you know, give them a hug, and I'll go on my way. But, yeah, I mean, it's something that is immensely hard, and everything else I do is hard for me, and I would just be overwhelmed. So I'm like, people, you know, what's the big deal? But I've had people say, you know, you're supposed to carry on the planet. But like, I think the planet's going to keep going.
Yeah, no. The human population, with all due respect, doesn't need you or me, frankly, to be procreating.
Well, there's a new book out that says so little women are having kids now that there won't be enough young people to take care of us all when we're old. And I'm like, well, then we'll adapt. Like, we adapt to things. Like, everyone calm down.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty silly, and I don't even know if that's necessarily accurate. I mean, at one point, the far more worrisome, I think, is global warming, because there's not going to be enough food to sustain us, and just less people, to get into a war. All right, let's talk. I mean, so how is this experience? This has got to be just such a weird experience for you right now, going on a book tour and then getting sort of bumped by one of the craziest weeks in news that I can remember in a long time. It must be just bizarre what's going on right now from your perspective.
Yeah, it's embarrassing because I'm not trying to say like, oh, this is important, but first week book sales are kind of the most important thing. You know, I worked for a year on it, and I'm doing all I can to give comfort where I can to people if they need it in all these tragedies. I don't know anyone personally affected. If there's money to give, I'll give the money. I'll keep the word out. I retweet stories. I mean, I'm doing everything I can. But I think there's this culture on Twitter that's like, how dare you self-promote during this terrible time? And it's like, well, then no one should ever be on Twitter, because right now someone is getting acid thrown in their face in Afghanistan because they're a woman. Right now a child just died of starvation. Like, so we should never do anything then. You know, it's like that kind of mentality where there's this like guilt. Where it's like we can kind of do everything at once. Like someone can run their business and be a socially conscious person. So luckily I haven't had too much backlash, but I do feel guilty and stupid because there's a presumption when people see you on TV or on the radio that you think what you're saying is important. And I don't. I just got to sell some books here so I can make a living.
And, you know, I got to say, you get into a lot of, like, you get attacked a lot on Twitter, don't you?
Yeah, and I like to retweet it because I feel like, you know, when like a senator says something like, oh, women, legitimate rape, and then all of a sudden his opponent gets all these donations, like it's sort of, you know, I'll admit it's a tactic I use. I like to show people what idiots say to me because it builds like more of a bond between me and my followers who understand each other. So I don't do it because I'm like, oh my God, I'm so upset. I think it's hilarious.
Do you think you get a lot more of that because, I mean, you're, I mean, I don't know that you're overtly political, but you are, I think, you know, more political in some respects than your average comedian, right? I mean, is that fair to say?
I think so, yeah. I'm not a political comedian. Like, that's the thing. If you come to see my act, I don't do jokes about politics because I'm just too angry about stuff to be funny. So when I'm on Twitter talking politics, I'm usually angry. And I think just the tone might turn people off, but that's okay. I don't mind, but I might get a little bit of hell for it, you know, but, or I have a lot of people explaining, like I tweeted once, why are we so involved with the Saudis? Like, it's so disgusting that even President Obama, you know, he's this liberal shining hope, which I don't think he is, but you know, that he still has to run that party line of like, oh, the Saudis are our friends. And people write back, it's because of the oil. I'm like, I know that, you dumbasses. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, I get a lot of mansplaining. You know, I'm like, oh, forget it. I can't even participate. But yeah, but I don't mind. I don't mind stirring it up.
It's fun. It's a great Twitter feed to watch. Now, all right, now, listen, I know you got only just a minute and a half here. Because you got another interview that apparently is not going to get canceled. Give me a movie selection. Because now, I don't even know if you prepared one, but I can't, because I have children, I'm not allowed to really leave my house to go see a movie for 3 hours. So I got to watch on Amazon or Netflix, or what should I watch?
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen a movie in a theater in 2 years because I work all the time. I literally don't know. I get those screeners. I'm lucky enough to get those screeners because I'm in the Writers Guild. So I get a bunch of stuff, and I can't even remember the last one I saw. I saw this documentary about Patty Schemmel, the drummer from Hole, called Hit So Hard last year. That was like one of my favorite movies I saw.
All right.
I saw Silver Linings Playbook like everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, I liked that. But I liked that Patty Selma movie, and I liked, I can't even remember. I can't even
think. It's so hard. You already sold it. You sold it. I bought it.
Yeah, it's a wonderful movie. She's a great lady.
All right.
You can buy it on iTunes or rent it on Netflix.
Hit So Hard, right? That's what it is?
Hit So Hard, yeah.
What?
Hit So Hard. H-I-T.
H-I-C. All right. Well, Jen, I'll let you go because I know you got to jump onto this other interview, but I appreciate your taking the time. People should go buy your book.
Don't love it. It's not anti-kid or anti-mom. It's silly, funny stories. It's heartwarming tales of me and my family. They'll love it.
Yes. All right. Jen Kirkman, thanks so much for joining us.
Bye, Sam. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right, folks. We got a Jimmy Reefer Cake song? All right, let's play that, and then we will head into the better half of the program where we will talk about, oh, God, all of this crazy stuff, and we'll take your phone calls. All right, we go. What's the Jimmy Reefer Cake song we got today?
I forgot what the title is, but it's I think it's just called 420 Celebration.
All right. What a bizarre week this is. I mean, I don't even know how to.
Let me tell you something. I need this Jimmy Reefer Cake song right now. I don't know about
you.
Yes,
here you go, folks. 420 Celebration. Of course, tomorrow is April 20th. And for those of you in the know, it is a big day. I mean, 420 is, I don't know, maybe it's in the song. I can't remember why 420 is a nickname for pot.
Isn't that like the code for it as a crime? Like
I don't know about that one.
That's what I thought.
Well, there you go. All right, let's listen to Jimmy Reefcake. Maybe he'll tell us.
It's Reefer Madness.
420.
Reefer Madness for you. Legalize it. Everybody in this country.
For one.
Finally, it's a Reefer Cake Nation celebration. Washington and Colorado recreation. Don't worry or a town, cause it won't be long till you are two singing this happy song. The governor. It's Reefer Madness.
Reefer Madness. Happy 420, everybody. Rich Horn Solo.
All right. Well, Reefer Madness. You've got... Jimmy Reefcake really seems to be in his sort of late Lennon, Yoko Ono period. It's sort of hootenanny style. Doesn't tell us why 420, but maybe next time. All right, folks, we're going to head into our better half of a program wherein we will talk more about this Texas refinery explosion. It is, in many respects, it has a lot more to do about government policy than even what's going on in Boston, although the implications of what we're seeing with our civil liberties and this idea that you can shut down a city and anybody on the streets is considered a some type of suspect is a little bit disturbing. Now, that said, you know, we also have a tremendous amount of social media that's out there that, you know, theoretically functions as some form of check on unbridled authority. The flip side of that, of course, is that it ends up implicating maybe innocent people. There's a lot of people who have speculated that those two kids, those two teenagers who end up on the front page of the New York Post is because sloppy reporters were getting their information from like crowdsourcing sites like Reddit that were doing the investigations and, you know, without really confirming this stuff with the FBI. I mean, it's just, there's so many things to unpack in this. It's really, it's overwhelming in many respects. So we've got to take a break. When we come back, we will talk more about that. I will take your phone calls. I will take your IMs. We will talk more about what's going on in Boston as well, to the extent that we know anything new. Folks, it is your support for this program that makes this program possible. We try to be as responsible as possible, but still make things relevant, you know, and, you know, in a situation like this, it's be very easy for me to do the Alex Jones thing here, who jumps on YouTube apparently at 5 this morning and start talking about Israelis. These guys look Israelis. They're involved. It's a, you know, No, it wouldn't be easy for me to do that. I mean, physically, it would be easy for me to do that. Emotionally, it would be very tough. It would be far more lucrative, and I guess maybe that's how Alex Jones does it. He looks at himself in the mirror, and he just makes sure that his mirror is also pointing to the wonderful amenities in his house. And he just, got to remember what it's paying for. Yeah. Maybe he has a running tally of his checking account hanging above his mirror. It's that makes it easier. But same with Glenn Beck, of course. And there's others. But all right, we're going to take a break. It is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at majority.fm. Other ways of supporting the show, we will see you Monday if you're listening just to the free show. If not, we'll see you in just a moment. We'll be right back.